This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 263, Bionic Hawkeye Jellyfish. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful Friday with sun and chilly weather and not quite winter, but not spring. Afternoon with my friend and co-host Michael Martin for another exciting adventure in the world of GamesAtWork.biz. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Peachy. I'm lemony.
Lemony.
I don't know. but we're about to get even better because we're here to talk about VR and AR and bots and this and that and the other. So how about we dive right in? A little VR experience, perhaps,
yes,
to get the party started. Article hit my feed this week. Not entirely a new story. We've actually talked about this. I think Facebook has had experiences in this regard before, and others have too. But there's a company out here that is called Melody VR, and I don't think we spoke specifically about them before.
Maybe their name rings a bell,
doesn't it?
Sorry, that was just too easy.
I'm not going to go the Harmony route for this too, but I can see where you're heading. So Melody VR is a company that has done filming of concerts so that you can have an immersive virtual reality experience. And, you know, it's one of these situations of how fun would this be for you to actually relive the same concert? You can relive it from potentially multiple different perspectives, right? Do you want front row seats? Do you want to be sitting next to the drummer? Do you want to be able to walk around and check it out? But this particular company, look at this, was valued around 220 million pounds for doing something this fun. And their model is super simple, right? Just like you would buy a song, you could buy a video of a VR experience of a concert and walk around it, or buy a whole concert.
Yeah, this right? is, you know, I always find this interesting. And it was one of the early use cases that was really touted in Second Life. I mean, U2 did a Second Life concert. There was all kinds of concerts, and the idea was you could get up close, you could move around, et cetera. In a virtual world, this is virtual reality, that's easy for me to say, which will have a much more immersive aspect to it. The one thing that I thought about, though, as you were describing the article and I was kind of thinking through the experiences that could be have, is – for the people who actually paid the money to go see the concert, there's got to be many different cameras moved around during the concert itself in right. order to stitch together the virtual space that is necessary to give you the number of different viewpoints and experiences that make the added service valuable, right? And so if you're sitting there at a concert, mm-hmm. and let's say you paid for, you know, super ultra VIP deluxe seating next to the stage with a behind the scenes tour to meet the band, right?
Right.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And you're sitting there and you're in your fantastic seat and the show's about to start, and suddenly nice. The camera guy swings around in front of you because they want to give that same experience to the people who are buying this after the fact. And they move out of the way. And then, you know, there's just all this opportunity for incremental camera work that has to occur, or the VR experience becomes a lot more static. And it reminds me of the home tours, right, where you oh, yeah. can walk through the house and there are certain key points that are where the camera is positioned and taking a picture. And then you have that kind of parallax zoom view that occurs as you transition between the different locations, just like the castle tour that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Exactly.
Same experience, right?
You bet. Mm-hmm.
And you start going through this and you go, at what point does the data capture become hidden enough or unobtrusive enough to where the capture itself doesn't impact the people who are having the real experience versus the virtual experience?
Yeah, you're right. So it does have that level of complexity, absolutely, for sure. And it could potentially detract from the people that are there live and real too, right? If there's that many cameras, you know, going around doing their thing. Flip side of that, you might be able to create an experience here too, where you're using drones, you're using other ways to do this sort of recording.
Yeah, because drones are quiet.
Drones are quiet. Yeah, exactly. You know what? Shoot, if you're in a when was the last time you were in a concert that was so quiet you could hear a drone?
Well, we've got tickets coming up in May to go see a piano concert.
Ooh, okay. Well, that would be a thing. We've got tickets next week for Postmodern Jukebox coming to Durham, so I'm kind of excited about that.
Could you hear a drone there?
You know, probably not, because they do like a lot of tap dancing and stuff, and that's kind of loud. the couple of things though that struck me as like super neat about this,
yeah,
is that this company, I was just perusing their website a little bit. According to the article, they're going to have their own VR headset to be able to use in conjunction with their phone app. And the price point for it is super low, right? It's you know, just above Google Cardboard level, right? So that lets your phone be the screen and the speaker, which is kind of interesting. And it's not nearly then as expensive as the Oculus or some of the other, you know, structures around this. Those two pieces coupled together just tell me is like, okay, it's something that's taking the concert experience and taking just another step towards the next level, where instead of buying the DVD of your favorite, you know, Pink Floyd, The Wall concert in Berlin, and having that level of curated experience, the things you could do if you did what you just described a couple moments ago could really allow for the ability to experience the concert multiple times over and seeing it from multiple and hearing it from multiple different perspectives, changing how the sound is based on where you are for the concert.
Yeah. And the whole auditory positioning is going to be key too. Yep. You're spot on.
Yep. Yep. So neat stuff. You know, not super new. And I think it might have been last. Well, we'll have to look back in the history of Games That Worked Up is to see exactly when. But there was a DJ Marshmello concert in Fortnite, kind of like what you were describing earlier about what YouTube did and others. That maybe that's what we talked about. So been around for a little while, and we'll see where this actually heads. So speaking of,
well,
things,
before you speak something else, you know, I decided to look through the concerts, and yeah, when I started going through, I was like, I recognized like two, and then I started going further and further down, and there's some freaking awesome shows in here. UB40, The Who at Wembley. Oh man, okay.
Panic at the Disco.
Yeah, they're okay. there are some good ones in here. Yeah, Imagine Dragons if you're into that. Kelly Clarkson if you're into that. Kiss if you're into that. I mean, I'm the LSO, right? The London Symphony Orchestra has a couple of concerts in here. I think this might be worthwhile.
So the auditory aspect, and maybe that's something, you know, I just kind of threw that out there and you latched onto it. And I think that's really an intriguing piece here, that if you're able to really take the London Philharmonic, you know, or, you know, the event location and capture the acoustics and allow you to optimally place yourself to experience the concert in that way, that could be super really cool too, and require a little bit better experience than just a phone in a Google Cardboard kind of structure to really take full advantage of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, think about it. You need to know the sound structure and shape, right? So that you can get the angles and stuff. And then all you need to know is where the position of the camera and the turn of the head is, because everything else can be dynamically simulated. Because you don't want to have the actual microphone feed that's coming in off the camera at like a KISS concert in the fifth row back to the left, right? Because that'll sound like as the microphone just gets clipped to death.
Well, remember, now this is another one we'd have to go hunt for. Remember how we had the example, I think it was from Bose or somewhere else, that was doing the microphones kind of based on a human head?
Well, yeah, that was the whole, exactly. That was the point.
Yeah. I thought that's where you were heading, but I wasn't sure.
Well, that was clear. Clear.
So moving from AR to VR, and I know this has got to be something that was exciting for you. You found what Sketchfab is doing. So walk us through that.
This is great.
Cool.
This is great. And years ago, I actually supported a Kickstarter that the Smithsonian was doing to what they call reboot the suit, right? And this was taking the suit of Neil Armstrong from landing on the moon,
right,
and do a total, I don't want to use the term renovation, that's not the right term, but re-preservation of it.
Restoration?
Restoration, thank you. Yeah. Re-preservation, that's a new word.
And I like it. It does say what it's supposed to be.
As part of that effort, what they did is they did detailed 3D scans. Mm-hmm. Of the suit, the glove, and as a Kickstarter backer, I got copies of those models for the glove, so you could print your own life-size replica of the glove of the spacesuit that landed on the moon, right? The Smithsonian, working with Sketchfab and Sketchfab working with other cultural sites, has been building out a huge library of public domain scans of historical events, historical artifacts. What this article that I saw pop up in my feed talks about is the accessibility of those and how those are now available on this new dedicated site that Sketchfab has set up. And it's fascinating to me. I mean, the ability to, this is going to sound really weird, physically, virtually hold a piece of history in hand.
Physically, virtually.
Yes, because it's not the actual physical thing, but you're physically holding it. So it's virtually physical, actually.
It's a physical virtual reproduction.
Representation of the virtual physical. But it is really, really cool, especially, you know, years ago and even very recently during various conflicts, there are international treaties that are supposed to protect historical sites and artifacts. In practice and in reality, during armed conflict, some of these get damaged and destroyed, forever lost to history. It will be interesting to capture as much of this as possible and to make it freely available for people to still experience the wonder and the just incredible history that some of these artifacts represent.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. And the fact that these are being made available, you know, for use in the construction of other virtual or augmented reality worlds, and you could see how these models could be directly imported to either, could be pretty dang cool. And having these sort of libraries that are easily accessible like this, from a cultural perspective, plus is awesome.
Well, I was amazed at the level of complexity and just the the detail of these models. I had tried to print the Wright Flyer because they had a 3D scan of the Wright Flyer. And it was just at such a high level of fidelity that when I scaled it down to something that I could actually print on my printer at the time, the wires were hair thin, right? Because they had scanned it down to every wire, you know, stretching between the wings and the, just really cool.
Wow. Very, 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 very neat. So staying on the vision theme, we had a link that came in from our good friend, Andy Piper, around Hawkeye and capabilities around Hawkeye and access controls related to iOS. And the first thing that kind of sprung to mind for me, Michael, and I don't know if this was entering your realm of consciousness too, was I was like, Hawkeye, I remember that from something. And No. But now that you say that, and BJ and Radar and everyone else, I was thinking about there's a tennis, a system in tennis that determines whether or not the ball is in or out of bounds.
Yes.
Right. And that's called Hawkeye too. So I took a quick look at that, and that seems to have a different logo than the Hawkeye controls that are in the App Store.
Yes.
So, thanks, Andy, for showing this. But it looks like it is a way to control your Mac or your phone or what have you, just by head movements. So not gestures with your hands, but with head movements.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to test this out because at WWDC this past year in 2019, Apple made a big deal about the accessibility features that were being added into macOS, iOS, iPadOS, etc. And there was a really, really great video on navigation and control. And what it appears to be is that the team at Hawkeye Labs Incorporated have leveraged that API to actually provide facial and head movement gesture control, as you described, leveraging mm-hmm. your iPhone or iPad with the TrueDepth camera. So any of the newer devices that have Face ID, basically, right. will then have the ability to control your Mac. And so I've just installed it on my Mac. Cool. I will not turn on my mobile device yet, but I will have to test this out. This looks really exciting, and maybe give a report back.
Oh, that'll be awesome. I'm noticing too from the App Store preview on the Mac side that you can actually open this by saying "Hey Siri," so that's kind of fun too.
Yep.
All right, yo. So we will check into this and see how this goes. So staying on the theme of controlling things, and I bet I can guess why this attracted your attention. There's a notion about having bionic virtual reality controls, and the image here is of a set of electrodes on somebody's head.
So this is funny. So this is from a website called Protocol, and it came through my feed from Mal Burns, who has been around a long time in this space where we, you know, get interesting articles, right? And this Protocol appears to be one of these magazines or articles or websites that tracks patents, right? And yep. So Apple has recently filed two different patents with VR and body sensing electrodes, basically EEGs, to manage the, as he puts it, a world of books and movies with the actual environment in your living room. So years and years ago, we talked about the emotive headset, which is, in my mind, a very, very good physical manifestation of what they're talking about here, in the sense that it's a headset with all the electrodes necessary to do appropriate level of EEG. And It also understood facial control, bridging it back to Hawkeye, and it understood kind of, you know, the geographic positioning of your head. So smiles, grins, gritting of teeth, where your eyes are moving for eye tracking, the rotation of the head, and the EEG together. So add all of that together, and you have a very high likelihood of extending the VR experience on the other end, right, to do much better kind of emotional interaction, as well as to understand a lot of the in-world physical positioning necessary to make it even more engaging on this end of the transaction, right? So if you and I were both doing a podcast, I don't know when that would ever happen. But let's say we were. Yeah. And
maybe,
we both
maybe in a virtual world space.
In a virtual like a world, and we both had, you know, EEGs on with face tracking, eye tracking, facial expression mapping, etc. It would be almost like we were sitting across from each other.
But you would know that I was looking over here instead of over there?
Well, I thought you were over there, but then I heard you over here and saw your eyes move over there.
So my reaction to that is that so many of the things that we're seeing and hearing and talking about right now are outbound control interfaces, right? You know, so the Hawkeye is what you do to influence the virtual reality experience, or the Melody VR example of, you know, going around doing stuff. And this here, the EEG kind of thing, is the same thing. It's all you outbound. The outbound into you, I think, is going to be the intriguing thing. And granted, a lot of that is, sure, it's there already. That's what your eyes are for. That's what your ears are for. But wouldn't it be interesting to increase the processing speed of the brain by having not an EEG reader, but perhaps, say, an EEG writer?
Ooh, don't say that. Well, it's funny. Yes, I went there too. the funny thing with that is there were patents recently exposed, and I can't remember if it was Apple or Facebook or Tesla, on human brain interface, which would be that inbound EEG that you're talking about.
To quote the article from Protocol, the future is going to be so weird.
Not like today, where everything's just peachy normal.
Yep. Okay, so data visualization. We love data visualization.
And it's been a while since we've had good ones. Come on.
Yeah.
We've not talked about ones on the show in a while. So saw this one in the feed today, had to throw it in the show notes.
Yeah, so I'm kind of spinning through it a little bit, and I'm going to have some more data visualization material for us in future shows, so stay tuned, right? Don't be worried about that. There's just some of these pictures are like, wow, crazy bonkers, like out of service railways.
People who are not looking at it, well, but are driving down the road and listening, this is an article from a company called Ranker.
Don't spoil it for him.
And it is comparison visualizations, right? So comparing population, compare between different parts of the U.S. and what is the equal size comparison in population density and landmass. There's a few there that just blow me away. I mean, just completely blow me away. Tree cover visualization, which kind of shows you, you know, what parts are the fruited plains, I guess is the way you would want to call it.
Yeah.
The one that kills me is light pollution. Having lived on the West Coast in parts of my life, I had forgotten how little light pollution there was in the areas I was living. But I remember thinking back and looking up at the sky and seeing beautiful vistas of stars at night that you really don't see where I live on the East Coast because there is so much light pollution and things like that. So it's just one of those sets of visualizations that you take something that you know and you overlay another piece of data that you don't know, and it completely changes your perspective. Love it.
That and maps are ultimately powerful.
Yes.
Because we're conditioned to respond to maps. So when you overlay data on a map, all of a sudden all kinds of extra things come to the surface. I had to say I chuckled at the use of the word dang, which is pretty funny. All dang. The places that is. And
it looks like we might be on the dang dag nabbit border.
maybe so. They didn't show what was yellow, I guess. We're kind of like, you know, Eastern style North Carolina barbecue versus Western style barbecue. It kind of diagonally cuts the state. I thought also very interesting here was that the number of locations of Starbucks is less in North Carolina than the number of locations of Dunkin' Donuts.
That's because we've got Dave and the Bean, man.
Well, yeah, I exactly. I don't pay attention to either one of them.
Me neither.
Because, you know, Dave, Bean Traders, Bean Team for life. Hench for life. Yeah, so cool stuff. I'm glad you found this, Michael. Awesome sauce.
Very cool.
And so speaking of awesome sauce.
Yes.
There's this. And this is going to be hard to explain, so you will have to take a look at the show notes so you can see this. A quasi-octopus related jellyfishy noodle fingery robot.
It would be a sexopus? Sextopus, right? Because it's six fingers, not eight.
Maybe so, but you know, it could be just the angle that I'm seeing. It could add a couple more legs to it.
Yeah, so this is really, really interesting. And it came across, again, one of my feeds. And when scientists investigate many of the gelatinous life forms that live in our ocean, interaction with them is highly traumatic to the creature. We as humans and most of our control devices that we use as humans are analogs to the human hand, which is stiff, it's hard, etc. And so when we grab things or try to capture things or try to manipulate things, it actually can damage cells and kill cells on these creatures. And
wow.
So scientists at City University of New York looked at how could you solve the problem of holding things that are basically floating balls of soft material. And they came up with a device that kind of looks like an octopus, right? It has six graspers, for lack of a better term. They're like fingers that are soft silicone, so kind of squishy, with very thin nanofiber sheets inside of them that can cause it to curl and uncurl based off of a pressure chamber inside. And that allows them to, like a jelly, like the arms of a man of war, right? Float around a creature and then very softly, closely close up around them like a cage while they're in the water in order to allow scientists to do investigation. And in studies, they were actually able to detect a significant improvement in the panic response of the fish or of the creature.
Right.
So that they believe they're able to better investigate and explore these sea life forms. I just thought it was very, very cool. It was an interesting way of solving a hard problem that leveraged, once again, as we've talked about in the past, the designs in nature.
So I watched the video while you were just walking through this, and let me encourage our audience to do the same thing, because the way that those tendrils kind of come together to grasp, capture the jellyfish in the way that it happens, it's super gentle, understandably not something that's going to damage it. And they're talking about the measuring of stress of jellyfish because of, you know, how they react here too. The thought crossed my mind that if you were able to do this on a micro scale, you know, this might be a way for surgery or for other kinds of things like that, where you've got to be ultra careful about segmenting one thing from another, not damaging either, and then doing something with the grasp. I mean, how incredible is this? I didn't quite understand it until I watched the video, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
This is really, really cool, Michael.
The article at the highest level, you kind of go, that's kind of cool looking, whatever. And then you watch it, and you then go back and read it again, and you're like, oh, man, this is fantastic. And I like the possibility of, can you do it in reverse, right? Which is the surgical example, right? Mm-hmm. If I can do it in reverse, then I can actually go in and very gently part tissue, right?
Right.
So that I can get at the thing that I need to do something with, and then let it naturally kind of go back together. So microscopic surgery. Very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It struck me as I was listening to you and looking at this. So neat stuff. Have a look. You will be pleased that you did. All right. So rounding things up today, you know, we were just talking about jellyfish and their anxiety and does a jellyfish dream or feel pain or whatever.
Only without peanut butter.
Yeah, maybe so. Oh, belly. So I always have these weird things kind of show up in my feed, and this is one of those weird things. And stay tuned for a sec, because there's some neat stuff to it. We've talked about range anxiety for electric vehicles and how that is a problem for a variety of folks. And one interesting solution from France, there's a concept called an EP tender. That's the French startup. And what they've done is they've created essentially a little trailer, which is itself another battery to
extend. It's an extender.
Yeah, to extend, right? So you could charge your way up, which is kind of cool. Definitely makes sense for Europe, because the kind of travel distances that happen in Europe are certainly less, for the most part, than what you experience in the United States, which, you know, go back to the maps and you'll see how wide and far apart we are in a lot of things. But it was interesting to see how this looks and where this operates. And it reminded me, Michael, of back when I would participate in the BMW homecoming events.
Yes, good
and
times.
Some of the people who would travel from California or, you know, wherever they were to Greer, North Carolina, where Plant Spartanburg is for BMW for homecoming, they needed a little bit more baggage space than what the trunk of the Z3 would afford, or Z4. And there are people that converted motorcycle trailers, which this kind of reminds me of, to be extra storage, and you could hook it up behind your little two-seater to get from California or wherever you were with enough clothing and stuff. So that's what this looks like. It looks like a little motorcycle trailer sort of thing behind the car.
So here's a question, because here's a question. I'm looking at their design spec. And given the fact that you're carrying extra weight, what is the increment? Well, it's multi-questions, kind of getting me down a path. Given the fact you're carrying extra weight, what is the extra drag that you're experiencing in order to bring your fuel station with you, right? So there's the negative. And then the second question is, given that it is completely independent and it's basically just a battery with wheels on it, I'm grossly oversimplifying, obviously. Yeah. Can that battery charge based off of the wheels moving on the asphalt?
Ooh. Well, so let me answer the last question first. I think so. You're on the lines of the
perpetual motion machine.
Perpetual motion machine. Yeah,
that's exactly why I was taking it.
So I would probably say, well, no, unless it was powered by cold fusion. and on the on the aerodynamics and wing speed of the European Swallow perspective, you'd have to have enough battery in there to overcome whatever drag and aerodynamics.
Well, you're not using its battery at all, right? So it's additional drag, it's additional weight that's going to drag the battery in your main vehicle,
yeah.
Right? So is it a 5% drag? But since you're adding 100% charge, it's irrelevant. Right?
Yeah.
And then when you charge, so now you get to the hotel or wherever you're stopping, you're charging your main battery. You're actually charging the secondary battery potentially if you had to use the secondary battery during travel that day.
Mm-hmm.
I love the idea. I'm just trying to figure out the logistics that tie around it. Anyway, yeah, very cool.
I am too, and it kind of reminded me a little bit of our conversation, Michael, when we were talking about the Cybertruck from Tesla.
Yep.
And the idea of loading up the bay with power walls, so you could like super batteryify the Cybertruck if you wanted to. All right, well, that brings us to the end of another electrifying edition of Games That Worked Up Is.
Yes.
And somehow or another, we allowed ourselves way too many puns this time, so apologies for that.
That just
happens on occasion. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to understand what's floating your electric boat or your electric robot or whatever it might be, so we can bring it up here and chat our way through it and come up with some interesting new ideas and extensions on our next show. And Michael, remind people how they can find us or how might they communicate with us.
Well, they could rock down to Electric Avenue. or follow us over on Twitter at games@work_biz.
That would be an awesome place to go. We hang out there a little bit. All right. Well, until next time, be cool to one another, and thanks for tuning in. And we're looking forward to connecting with you again on our next episode coming up soon. See ya.
Bye.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.